the board did when they began to get inkles that there was something not right was they appointed this outside committee, partly outside committee, headed by John McCloy, and consisting of Bev Matthews and Nate Pearson as board members. And they in turn employed some of Mr. McCloy's legal associates to make a thorough investigation, which they did, and they interviewed a lot of people in Gulf and got pretty well to the bottom of the thing and rendered their report, and you know the story from there. It's public record.
Who made the decision to tap you?
The board. I think Beverly Matthews probably had something to do with it. The board, once they made the decision that Dorsey had to go, they were obviously looking for who to take his place. And Jimmy Lee was there, but Jimmy was too close to it. He had been too much involved. But I think that was must have been their reason. I don't know, any, this is conjecture. But they looked around, and I had been sufficiently out of the loop for a sufficiently long time that I didn't know what was going on. That's all I had nothing to do with it. And therefore, I was, quote, Mr. Clean, as sometimes characterized. And I had been around the Gulf Circuit pretty well, thanks to a lot of planning, some conscious, some fortuitous, on Mr. Whiteford's part and others. And I had a pretty good background, and I'd had the overseas experience in London and in Canada. And I think perhaps as much as anything else, the Gulf Canada job was the nearest thing in the Gulf organization to another CEO. I was CEO of Gulf Canada, albeit about a 10% slice of the total corporation, but I had all the responsibilities of all the phases and all the aspects, and whether I liked it or not, that was part of the job. And you just can't be in a job like that without learning a good deal about how it's done. So that had something to do with it. And I say Beverly Matthews because Beverly and I got along very well. I'm a great admirer of his, and he seemed to think well of me, and I'm sure he put in a good word for me. So they selected me. You might be interested in the circumstances of the way I was informed. There was a regular meeting of the regional company presidents and the chairman's council, as it was called at the time. And that was a regular scheduled meeting. We met once a month to review how things were going and plans for the future and all that sort of thing, partly in preparation for the board meeting. And it was usually shortly after the board meeting so that Dorsey or whoever could bring the message, any message from the board to the operating group and get it underway soonest. There was a meeting of the board scheduled for Tuesday. There was a meeting of this management group for Wednesday. And Bob called me in Toronto Thursday or Friday and said, look, I don't know what the board's going to do, but they're going to take some sort of action. I think they may want to talk with you and some of the others about what they're going to do, so you better come down early. So I went down on Sunday night, twiddled my thumbs in the visitor's office all day, and the board was meeting all day. And finally, after spending a day reading my briefcase and whatnot, I went back to the hotel, and I ordered a scotch and soda and a steak to be brought up, and I was sitting in my room waiting for it to come, and the phone rang, and it was Dorsey's secretary, and it was Jimmy Lee's secretary, that called and said the board would like you to come over and talk with them. So I canceled the room service and went over back to the office, sat around twiddling my thumbs some more till about 8 o'clock, and in Jimmy Lee's office, he was in the board meeting. And directly I was waited on by a committee consisting of Nick Pearson and Bev Matthews and I believe Eddie Singer. Can't remember for sure. And in effect, they said the board would like you to take the job as chief executive. And of course, I was surprised and humbled and all the things that you naturally would be in the circumstances, mostly shock, because I really hadn't expected this. I expected to stay in Canada the rest of my career. I was perfectly happy. I could see myself continuing as the one of the principal people in the Canadian industry and a good representative of golf and involved in a good operation. We had a farm outside Toronto and it was a good life. We thoroughly enjoyed it. So I was perfectly content. I wasn't looking for this or any other job. But obviously it was not something that you say no to without a very good reason. So I said, of course, I'll do it, but with certain provisions. And the stipulations I set forth were that, first of all, I wanted to be clear that there was no question that I was to be the chief executive officer. And I was going to take this responsibility on. I wanted to have all the necessary authority to go with the responsibility. That was okay. And I said, I want to be sure that the board is 100% behind this selection. I do not want to take on this job with a divided board. That if there is a division of the board, I want to know about it. And either we fix the division, either by somebody's resignation or I don't go on the job. No, there's absolutely unanimous, so I was assured on that. I said, the third stipulation is you've got to understand that I'm not Bob Dorsey. I'm a completely different character. My style is different. I'm not flamboyant. I'm not charismatic. I'm not a lot of things that Bob was, and I admired him for it. And I'm a lot more plebeian and pedestrian and just plain vanilla, and I'm not going to do things very spectacularly, but I hope to do them solidly and get the job done, and I'm willing to give it everything I've got to do that. And they said they recognized that's one of the reasons they wanted me on the job, is they thought a change was desirable. And the fourth stipulation was, I said, now look, I'm 59 years old, and I'm a strong believer in retirement at the proper time, because while you lose some things, you gain some things, and I'm going to, unless something unforeseen happens, I would hope to work to the age 65, but not beyond. And so we've got 6 years to do whatever I can do, whatever I can make, I've got to make in that 6-year period. And that's the time frame I said I'm going to set. I think, frankly, if we're able to turn this company around, I said, there's a lot more wrong with it than any of us knows at the moment, I think, when you get into it, than there was. But if we're able to turn it around in 6 years' time and have something to be proud of, we'll have done pretty well. So I want to be sure that, assuming good behavior, you're going to stand behind me for the whole 6-year period, and that you won't come up at the end of the year saying you haven't changed white to black or black to white, so what the heck. I said, you've got to stick with me. He said, we're prepared to go in for the long haul. He said, on that basis, I'll take it, and I'll do the best job I can. And that was the basis. I took the job and was glad to do it. And that's the way it worked out. And it worked out, I must say, pretty well. We had our problems. And it was not, in some respects, it was not as satisfying a job as the Canadian assignment had been, because it was so much more complicated and so much more difficult to surround and to really understand that there were
problems there that I've not encountered before. Some of which I was able to handle, some of which I wasn't. But I did the best I could.
Well, you certainly had your hands full. You had the corporate image, which had been severely tarnished by that. You had the oil industry image at large, which was not in the best of times then.
Yes.
In terms of the company, earnings were off. You had foreign properties that had been nationalized. There was a new energy bill. I was struck by this comment you had made earlier. Interestingly, that an easy time to run a company. I mean, the odds that you were facing at that time must have been enormous.
Well, in addition to the things you've mentioned, Gulf had lost, in addition to its overseas producing properties, where most of our reserves were, we lost a substantial chunk of our domestic reserves as a result of legal action in the state of Texas, which terminated a big lease that we had in West Texas, which we thought was completely unjustified, but that's the way it turned out. We had made, during the Whiteford days, an overly ambitious contract with Texas Eastern to supply them with a great deal of gas out of the Gulf of Mexico, which we thought we had, but when we got into it, we found out we didn't have. And we were restricted by the then existing regulations from getting out and developing additional fields to supply the contract. So we had a contract with Texas Eastern that was very onerous, because to supply it, we had to buy gas at whatever it was, 50 cents, and sell it at 20 cents. It was terrible. The Gulf had gotten into this uranium business, into the nuclear power business, thinking it was a good possible diversification, and had gotten in over our heads, where we didn't really know what we were doing, and we were in the midst of extricating ourselves from that unfortunate piece of timing and judgment, and paying through the nose to do it, to get out of the contracts we'd made to build these General Atomic high-temperature gas cool reactor plants around over the country, and to supply the uranium for those plants. And we made contracts to supply the uranium and contracts to get the uranium from the then producers. And the then producers flunked out on us, and that led to the uranium litigation that we got involved in. And we were buying our way out, but then this other wrinkle of the litigation came up. And so all those things added together to make, as you say, quite a plateful, yes.
How did you decide what to tackle first?
Don't guess I really decided. As you said earlier, some of those things are decided for you. You just do each day what needs to be done. I'll tell you what I did to the extent that I decided anything. I said, first of all, the thing this company needs is to get back to work and to reestablish our values and reestablish what it is we're trying to do, and to set some basic rules as to how we're going to conduct our business, both as a company and as an industry. We were tarred with this political contributions brush and a lot of other things, and we were, I think unjustly in many cases, but not completely without some justification, tarred with having done some inappropriate political activities. So I made a point of sitting down. As a matter of fact, I dug out the files of a few pieces of paper that I thought might be of interest to you, and what I'll do is loan you these, subject to your making copies of them. I'm getting them back to you,
sure,
because they're out of the files, but it'll save them a lot of talking. But one weekend, shortly after I took the job, Jerry and I went up to our farm to kind of catch our breath and recover. And I spent a good deal of that weekend working on a statement of business principles, as we turned out, which turned out to be a one-page statement. And there were four basic principles, an outline and a letter to the employees. Gulf's business will be conducted in strict observance of both the letter and the spirit of the applicable law of the land wherever we operate. Two, where a situation is not covered by statute or where the law is unclear or conflicting, Gulf's business will be conducted in such a manner that we would be proud to have the full facts disclosed. Three, in cases of doubt, employees should seek competent legal and other advice which the company is prepared to make available through regular channels. And four, Gulf reaffirms its conviction that in any democratic society, proper and constructive participation in the political process is a continuing responsibility of individual citizens and groups of citizens, including Gulf employees and the company itself. Such participation, however, must be in full accord with the regulations, laws, and generally accepted practice of the jurisdiction involved. Strict adherence to the foregoing principles is hereby made a condition of continued employment. This was circulated through the company, and it later formed the basis of a more comprehensive statement of business principles and a code of business principles, which we circulated and used to some advantage. And I'll tell you, we put it in a proper form, so it meant something that you could frame and put on your wall. And I was astonished as I went around over the country to see how many people had this little statement of business principles stuck on their wall. And therefore, I think it had something to do with the resurgence of morale in the company and the renewal of the pride that we all felt in Gulf. And look, you can take that along at your convenience, but it was an important step, I think. And as far as priorities concerned, yes, I thought the first thing to do was to do what I could to restore the pride of Gulf people in what they were doing. And that was a big part of the initial undertaking. I knew that everybody I saw in Gulf knew more about their respective jobs than I did. And I didn't have any panaceas. I didn't have all the answers. I had no solutions to all the problems by any manner of means. But I have had, and still have great confidence in the people who were doing the jobs. They were a fine bunch of people who, by and large, were outstanding in their respective areas. And I told them so in the beginning, and I would rely on them to do their job, and it would be their job if I could help. I wanted to, but it was their job. And that's the way we left it. Now, sure, there were some disappointments, and some didn't work out, and we had to make changes and all that. That's part of it. But by and large, that was my approach to life. The second priority, I guess, was to get the organization straightened out a bit. I said early on, look, Gulf does not need another reorganization, for God's sake. We've had a reorganization every time there's been a new CEO, and sometimes two or three with the same CEO. And the whole company was in a turmoil because nobody really knew who was responsible for what. It was That was really one of the basic things wrong with the company. There was a great deal of confusion about who was supposed to do what. Dorsey had, in his wisdom, brought in some outsiders as advisors and consultants, and, as it turned out, strong participants in the planning and operation process, which they had no background for and didn't know what they were doing. And they were hot shots from the business schools and whatnot. And frankly, they sometimes caused more problems than they solved. But I did see that there was a necessity for not a reorganization, but for a realignment of responsibility. So one of the first things I did was to make it clear that while the organization we had, this regional functional, as we called it, strategy center organization, each of these functional areas was called a strategy center, one of business school phrase. It's supposed to be a profit center, except there weren't many profits in some cases. And that was the operating element. I said, now look, these are the guys that really are responsible for making things go. And these other staff departments, the planning department and the finance department and the personnel and the legal and all that, they're fine and necessary and we have to have them. But they are staff to the operating people. And under the previous setup, one of the problems was that a lot of these staff people had taken on operating responsibilities. And the people in the field were confused about who was the boss. They were getting word from Pittsburgh, and when anybody from Pittsburgh said something, boy, that was the law. And sometimes Pittsburgh spoke out of two sides of its mouth. So the only real organization change I made immediately was to change the chairman's council, as it was then called, to the chairman's advisory council. Now, that's just one word change, but it made a big difference, because then the planning department and the economics and the personnel and all that legal were advisory to the CEO and the senior executive and to the operating people, and it was the operating people to whom I delegated the responsibility. And I think this did a lot to get things sorted out. I wrote some things down in that connection also, which will save some talking if I just loan you this piece of paper as well, which summarizes that part of it. Now as to the real technical problems, of course, the big problem was changing golf from a big net producer of crude oil to a big net buyer of crude oil, with Kuwait and Venezuela and Iran, we were among the biggies when it came to worldwide crude supplies. And in fact, we were at least as big as any, maybe the biggest, when it came to selling crude oil as crude oil. Because at the time, we did not have much by way of downstream operations in Europe, and certainly and practically nothing in Asia. But we sold an awful lot of crude oil, both in Europe and in Japan and elsewhere in Asia. A lot of the crude oil in Europe went to Shell under an agreement that we worked out, a profit-sharing arrangement. But it went there as crude oil, not as products. And when that supply was cut off, and instead of having crude oil to sell, we had to buy crude oil to supply our limited, relatively small, I mean, maybe half of our total crude oil was used in our own operations to supply the crude required for that half of our operations. We had to buy crude oil, a lot of crude oil, some of it, a lot of it, from our former concession grantors in Kuwait and Iran and elsewhere. And sometimes at very fancy prices, Nigeria. And it was a completely different world because we were at their mercy. Instead of our having something to say about the terms, not as much as we were purported to have to say, or as much as we would sometimes like to have said, but a good deal. They set the price and they set the quantity, and that was what we lived with. So I guess that was the number one technical problem, and I must say our boys did a remarkable job there. The second problem was this Texas Eastern thing, and finding the gas to supply that contract was a major, major undertaking. As a result, in order to do it, we got very big in the offshore exploration, and we put up a great deal of money into offshore leases and exploration and production. And to make a long story short, they eventually were able to meet that contract and satisfy it completely. Another big one, of course, was extricating ourselves from the uranium business, and that was a long saga in itself, which eventually we got out of at considerable cost, but not an intolerable cost. And of course, the whole business of what to do with our refining and marketing end of the business was a major challenge. We were facing a shrinking market, and as I mentioned earlier, Gulf's crude availabilities tended toward heavy, high asphalt crudes, but our refining facilities, regrettably, had been built over the years primarily to take advantage of our then considerable availability of light sweet crudes, Nigeria and West Texas, various other domestic crudes, Gulf Coast and whatnot. And here we were faced with a limited supply of those kinds of crudes, and more having to run Kuwait and heavy uranium and other things like that, which were more available. And whether or not we were going to have the market that we had at the time and would be able to hang on to it economically, and the refining facilities required to do it, it was a dilemma of the first water. And we had some very, very smart people working at it over the years, and it was a continuing battle, which we never, there was no simple solution to it. We ended up doing, however, was doing some considerable upgrading of our refining facilities, and eventually solved the problem reasonably well. Another ongoing thing, of course, was the continuing battles with the government, both regulatory and tax-wise. The regulators got more and more into our business, and it was an ongoing chore that we dedicated the time and efforts of a great many excellent people to doing nothing but satisfying the government requirements. There's a hidden cost in all that will never be fully recognized. Every company, like as Gulf did, had to spend an enormous amount of time just trying to understand and then comply with the regulations that we were faced with. And of course, we had price controls, which stayed on oil products long after they'd been lifted from other products. We had on crude oil as well, which was completely in the wrong direction because it limited. Go ahead and change, if you like.